Welcome back to Swanner and Judd Review. I'm Tom Swanner.
This is Brian Judd.
And yes, I have a cold. Okay. Just in case you're wondering why I sound like this.
Oh, I like the smoky. It's sexy.
Yeah, that's great if I'm doing like a Kathleen Turner imitation, but
now Kathleen Turner now, or maybe Lucille Ball at the end of her life there.
The end of life. Thank you. Yes. So let's see. This week on RuPaul's All Stars, they did a design challenge. And what I always love is Roxy it always helps everybody with it, because she's one of those people that can whip up a gown in like 30 minutes. You know, she's just so good. So she helps everybody, and she won this week, so that was good to see, because you know, it doesn't have to be so cutthroat. So
sure.
Let's see. I started a new show called The Goat, and this is hosted by Daniel Tosh.
Oh.
And so what it is they've got 14 reality stars. Well, people who are on reality shows, and from all different shows. They don't have any double ups, but they've got 14, and they are trying to win $200,000 and be the greatest reality star of all times. It's just stupid. I mean, it's really, really stupid.
But I always like Tosh as a host. Is he?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's the only, he's entertaining, but you know, he's sitting there going, you know, like it feels like he's a dog in a movie. You know, somebody's like going, "You're getting paid for this. Sure. You're getting paid for it." Yeah. He's, and it's almost kind of demeaning watching him do that, because I always liked him a lot. So, but you know, he's getting paid. You're right. It's fine. This week, Arnie Tex, yeehaw! Ooh!
That is very close to Speedy Gonzalez. You might want to.
No, that's very close to him. You need to watch more.
Okay.
Let's see. Guacamole and salsa this week. I did see he made a hamburger with chorizo cheese sauce that he poured over the top of it.
I saw the thumbnail to that, and it just looked like a greasy, greasy mess.
Yeah, it kind of was, but he liked it. This week on Evil, we had witches and AI. They did some AI stuff that was pretty funny. The children in the show are trying to make up a scary story, so they use the AI to help them with pictures and stuff like that, and it was some horrible things, because it is evil. So yeah, so that was fun. Let's see, the boys this week, they had another grotesque sequence, as always. This was out on a farm where they had been, scientists have been giving the V, which is the juice that they become superheroes, has been giving it to animals, and didn't turn out well. There's like a flying sheep, they're really quick, and they just like tear off arms. They'll fly by and rip off your arm. And they had chickens that would just fly right through you. You know, just like right through your body, and then you're dead.
So were they so dumb that they didn't know, or were these evil animals?
Well, they gave them the juice.
Sure, yeah,
and it made them evil.
Oh, it made them evil. Okay. Evil super animals.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, they it was, and it was disgusting. Heads were being ripped off. You know, bodies were having chickens fly through them, and all the guts are flying everywhere.
Sure.
It was another fine episode. Another fine episode there. The Bear started this week.
Yay.
And well, actually, I shouldn't say it started. They dropped all the episodes for the season, all 10 episodes.
Really?
So I've already seen two. And the first episode was really, it was artsy. It's kind of like, it's one of those episodes you usually think is around 8 or 9 in the season, you know, right before the cliffhanger, where they can go off and do something, you know, like a musical, you know, number show, you know, which probably will be coming up this season. But this is where we're watching him, the lead guy, and his journey into how he got to be this crazy cook that is chef that he is. So all the places he's worked and different bosses he's worked under. They had Olivia Colman and Joel McHale had been previous bosses of his. So
oh, fun.
And they don't have much screen time either. So they did it because I guess they wanted to be on the show.
Well, it was very popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
For whatever reason.
And then finally, I did watch this, I guess it would be like a mini bio documentary on Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. How was that?
I thought it was, well, first of all, they only talked about the incident briefly once in the thing where he's talking about how he never gets photographed as himself. He's always getting photographed as Pee Wee Herman, except for this one instance where he got photographed as himself, and that was not what he wanted to have happen
as it was coming out of the adult. Yeah, well, that's on YouTube, and it's only 30 minutes, and I mean the focus wasn't even on him, Paul Reubens. It was focused on, I mean, it was to the fact that, you know, Paul Reubens was Pee Wee Herman, but the focus was more on Pee Wee himself and what the character was meant to be and how he got started, you know, with the late night circuit and day show shows in L.A., which I didn't. The picture of the Foundlings,
Groundlings.
I didn't know Edie McClurg was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I was down there in L.A. In the mid 80s when I had, well, 84, 85, and I had auditioned for the Groundlings. They didn't take me because, as they put it to me, we already have a fat guy. I don't know. I'm not sure who that was at that time. I'm sure they ended up on Mad TV though. So it was probably one of the fat guys that was on Mad TV or what was Fridays. Fridays was, that was a Groundling based cast in Los Angeles as well. Jaina did get to work. She went and did a show one night with them.
And they
didn't call her back, but she was unofficially a Groundling for one night. So
sure.
No, because they didn't have, I guess, a blonde girl. I don't know.
Starting with the Groundlings and doing the late night circuit with David Letterman, because David Letterman always had kind of weird guests on. I mean, that was his shtick. While Johnny Carson was interviewing celebrities, he was interviewing weirdos. And then it turning into a children's show, which is kind of, it sounded like his goal all along, or at least base the character off old children's shows hosts.
It was funny. I was watching an interview with the guy who's starring in Oh Mary on Broadway.
Cole Escola.
Yeah. And he was saying that when he started off doing the show, when he was kind of investigating what he would do with Oh Mary, the idea of Mary Todd Lincoln, you know, benefiting from the fact that her husband was assassinated. He said, you know, originally, you know, before we went to Broadway or even to, you know, main theaters, this was my shtick. I was doing it for drunk gay people. So we had to change kind of what happened. And I think that's what probably happened with Pee Wee Herman was, or with the Playhouse. The Playhouse was for drunk adults at one point.
Sure.
And then, you know, then he had to shift everything down to where it would be for sober adults and their children. Yeah, it was that.
Well, part was, no, I would think because Pee-wee's Big Adventure is one of my favorite movies, and it's like the Muppets. It plays at two different levels. It's a kids movie,
sure.
But at the same time, it plays in an adult level, a very stoned adult sure. level.
Right.
But,
no, I know, agree with you. Now, did I tell you that I actually attended the premiere for Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
No,
yeah.
Did not.
Oh. It was the summer. I was a friend of mine was running the Chinese theater, or actually, it was Man's Chinese Theater at that point.
Yeah,
and so he wanted pictures taken during the thing. So I was their staff photographer for the summer.
Wow!
They had the Big Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I watched it from Sid Grauman's box, which they normally didn't let people use unless they were trying to get him away from. And of course, everybody, there were a lot of celebrities there. So everybody wanted to be in the main thing to get seen. And then afterwards they had a big party on top of I want to say it was the Holiday Inn parking structure, but on the top, they turned it into a carnival. They had a Ferris wheel, which smaller Ferris wheel,
sure.
but it was just great. It was really fun, and there were a lot of celebrities there. It was really fun, but anyway, but yeah, that's my little thing into Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Sorry,
look at that. You got the Groundlings, you got Pee-wee. You're just all up in Paul Reubens' business.
Yeah, it was. It was an interesting time for me, and well, I guess for him too, because he became famous. But it was also interesting that he didn't want to bring. Why do you think he didn't want to bring Pee-wee back? Do you think it's because, I mean, he ultimately wanted to, but he didn't for like. Didn't play it for like 20 years. The documentary.
Well, I think after being caught coming out of, for at least the first 10 years, he was just toxic. I mean, no one wants a children's host that is known coming out of a pornographic theater and collected pornographic material.
Well, and don't forget, he also was arrested, wasn't he?
I can't remember.
I thought he was arrested for jacking off in a movie theater, even though it was an adult movie theater.
But that's the same incident.
Yes,
I don't know if it led to an arrest or not. So
yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what that, because they like I said in the documentary, they just kind of smoothed over that thing. So, but yeah, well, granted,
knows it.
So he doesn't bring Pee-wee back because he doesn't want to basically stain the reputation of Pee-wee with Paul Reubens.
Well, there's that. And I mean, he'd been doing it for 20 years. I would want to try and do something else too. I mean, that's what led to him doing, appearing in other movies not being Pee-wee. I mean,
sure.
I mentioned it in the movie. I can't remember some of the titles, but I mean, just being the Penguin.
One of the father. Batmans. Yeah. One of the Batman's movies. He was one of the,
but he, villains. That was, he was just a side character or
sure.
Just a special appearance. And I can't remember. And I saw it too, but he had a lead role in some sort of weird superhero movie. And I can't remember the name of it. Someone is shouting at their radio right now.
Radio. Oh my God. Listen to you. So sad. But anyway, it's the man behind the bow tie, Pee Wee Herman's story on YouTube, if anybody wants to check that out. And one other thing I checked out was, I went into the mod rabbit hole last week. And so somebody sent me a clip from Carol Burnett's show where Carol Burnett was playing Maude, but they called her Broad, and Walter was Harvey Korman. And what I found most interesting about that, because it was an okay skit, but what I thought was interesting was how, I mean, for 1973, 74, when that came out, how progressive, obnoxiously progressive, Carol Burnett painted the Maude character.
I thought that was hysterical because
but that would be hysterical today too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But I mean,
because we know people just like
sure.
That.
Yeah. And the thing is though, she, I don't know. When I watch Maude, I understand she's progressive, but not that progressive.
Oh, and, come on. That's the reason, not someone, I sent you the broad clip.
Okay. Thank you for sending me. I was just trying to share that we might have somebody out there that's listening to this, and you have to
no one listens to this. But I had finally watched that the gay episode of Maude that you had sent a week or two ago. Yeah. And then of course that followed up with Carol Burnett's Broad, but the premise of that skit is that Broad is hiring a maid, and then Walter asks her, well, you know, what color is she? And she's like, what does it matter, Walter? People are people. And that's one of the exact lines that she used in the gay bar episode. They're just people. But then the maid shows up and it's Esther Roll, who plays in New Jersey instead of Florida. And then throughout the whole sketch, Broad is at her feet, literally on her knees, telling her, what can I do for you? What needs to be done? What can I do for you? And then New Jersey points to everything that needs to be cleaned and says, pay me.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny, but I was just surprised because I didn't know anybody like that in 1973, but I know a ton of people like that in 2023. So, well, actually that's a lot of years. Okay. Yeah. So what'd you do this week?
In addition to The Man Behind the Bow Tie, another YouTube special that I watched. So pre-pandemic, Coco Peru used to go shopping. She'd go into like Walmart and Goodwill and just make these hysterical videos picking up crap merchandise and just reading it for trash. Well, she's back. So 2 weeks ago, and YouTube just suggested it to me, she goes shopping at Five Below. And I had just been shopping at Five Below last week for the first time. So, I saw a lot of the same trash that she was going through and just going, this is absolute garbage.
What is Five Below?
So it is a store, much like the dollar store, what used to be, where everything is $5 and below.
Oh, yeah. So now they just have more expensive shit.
Yes.
Okay. Exactly. Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. And she got recognized while she was, so she's looking at all this crap, like I said, that I had just seen. She's reading it for trash. There is this group of cheerleaders that show up, and she's like, I fucking hate cheery people. I hate cheerleaders. They're the worst. And then there's an immediate cut where she's talking to the whole group of them, going, oh, well, thank you. Apparently the gay boy, of course, within the troop recognized her. So she had to be polite. And after they had left, she's like, everything I said about cheerleaders was wrong. They were the best people. They were the nicest kids I've ever met. I'm so but if you're a fan of Coco Peru, the fact that she's back shopping is a nice return. After watching what was it, the bike riders last week, Queerty, that trashy website, suggested a movie called The Leather Boys, which was released in 19, I think, 60 something, and it's a British film, and it's about these bikers. The one gets married right out of high school, and then his wife turns into an absolute nag, you know, to the point where it's stereotypical. She's eating chocolate in bed, eating chocolate. Peg Bundy. So he hangs out with his biker friends more as she nags and tells him she's pregnant, trying to get him to come back home and, you know, all that stuff, all those stereotypical things. And then at the end of the movie, he decides to run away to America with his friend. And as they stop at a port bar that happens to be a gay bar, and you know, the lead character realizes, okay, these are a bunch of the faggy boys. And then his friend walks in and they're like, oh, hey, Charlie. And he's like, oh, I can't do this. And then he
kind of like that episode of Maude.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I'll take the usual. Yeah.
Exactly. But so you don't get any. So I mean, there was some homoeroticism throughout. I mean, so when he leaves his wife, he moves in with his grandmother. His friend moves in with him because he's got nowhere else to stay. So they do share a bed. But I mean, that's, you think, okay, it's post-war Britain. There's only so many beds to be had, I guess.
Post-war, this is the 60s.
20 years later, they're still recovering.
Okay.
They had to get rid of all the damp. They were still trying.
It's still there.
Exactly. but there was no... There was nothing homoerotic about it. So anyway, it was on Tubi, gigantic waste of time. I watched Joe Pera, Slow and Steady, on YouTube. He's an alt comic who's not funny. His whole routine is just a bit. It's just shtick. He looks like he's probably in his late 20s, and he talks like he's an 80 late in his, he talks like Joe Biden, basically, just kind of a senile old man that stumbles through his jokes, and the jokes aren't even funny. It's just the fact that it's this young kid that sounds like an old man that is supposed to be funny, and it goes on for an hour. Just awful. So stupid. I turned it off halfway because I'm like, the shtick wears thin after 5 minutes. You're like, oh, this isn't going anywhere. This is the joke. Yeah, no, I'm not wasting my time on this. Kyle Kinane dropped a new stand-up. Well, it's new to me because it was released it was filmed in 2022. And all except the last bit was new material or unreleased material. So if you're a fan of Kyle Kinane, he's got a new concert out. And then I'm just about a little over three quarters of the way through Gone with the Wind, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. Chapter 37 is dedicated to the KKK and the good that they did. Because they were the only ones that were willing to right the wrong that the poor Southern people suffered under the Yankees, who hated them. And you're just like, oh, holy shit. Like, because can you believe that under this whole Reconstruction period, you couldn't hang for being uppity? You just couldn't do it anymore. But thankfully, the KKK set that right. But the interesting thing is that as of 2014, there was a Harris poll, which is kind of like Gallup. And I was able to verify this through the Christian Science Monitor because they did an article on it. At that point, 2014, Gone with the Wind was the number two favorite book, second to the Bible.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
Currently.
I remember how popular it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
I can't believe that, you know, reading it as it is. Well, I mean, of course, it was published in 1932, which was already several decades after the Civil War. So it was already out of date and racist. And here we are, you know, 80 years later, and it's still, or almost 100 years later, 90 years later, and people are still reading it and rereading it and considering it a favorite book when it is so blatantly a period of, or a piece of propaganda for like what the Daughters of Confederacy doing and Confederacy sympathizing. I can't believe it, because it is so blatantly racist.
Yeah, I know people who whose parents, well, mothers were part of the women of the Confederacy.
The Daughters of Confederacy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was now, and honestly, I never really thought about it. Now I am, and I'm just shocked. So, yeah, that's, wow.
But it's also, outside of the blatant racism, just some of the things that the women went through. I mean, the clothes and how uncomfortable they were. I think I mentioned that after Scarlett's first husband died, she had a veil. She was supposed to wear a veil that went down to her knees for the first year. And then after a year, she could cut it shoulder length and wear the shoulder length veil for the rest of her life. And she was only like 16. And then there was a passage recently, India, which is Miss Melanie's sister. They were talking about how bitter and just jaded she looked. And the sentence is, the mantle of spinsterhood was on her shoulders now. She was 25 and she looked it.
God.
she was 25 and she looked it. There was no longer any need for her to try and be attractive.
Why is this so popular?
That is my question. But I'm gonna have to remember that one. the mantlehood of spinsterhood, or the mantle of spinsterhood, is on her shoulders now. She was 25 and she looked it.
Well, it's like I'll get the Sunset Boulevard. The character, the main character, is in her 50s, and yeah. And when they made her up like she's a silent film star, an old silent film star, and it's always, the character is always played by somebody, an actress in their 60s or 70s when they're doing it. Never play it for, you know, hey, I'm just, you know, 53 years old. It's sure. Like, oh, horrible. But that, yeah. So women have been getting the, I don't want to say the wrong thing. So they've just been getting the bad, it's been bad for them forever. There we go. It just doesn't stop.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
And that's all I have. I mean, yeah. It's a lot of crap this week. Still watching Tacoma FD. Still extremely funny. Although I'm coming towards the end of the fourth season. And I'm surprised it didn't go on any farther, but maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm learning that now, that when they cancel shows, they go, oh, you know, we've got as far as we're going to go. That's for a reason. You know, it's you look at some of the, does Grey's Anatomy really need to be on for 20 years? Are the storylines still as crisp as they were
sure
back in the old day? I don't, you know, it's just sometimes I think it's just take it out in the back and, you know, old yeller it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, I guess just for those who don't know, we're in the Valley in California, and we've got hundreds, Well, the temperature goes anywhere from like 104 through all next week through, I think there's a 112 planned, and so we're not used to being quite that hot. So the pool will not be useful to keep cool. It'll just be a warm bath. Yeah. And I can't get in anyway because of my hand.
You had surgery. So, no one can
see. I had surgery.
Anything. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
We do, since our 10 minutes, how about that other clip that someone sent you with Vaughn Vreeland, the cook from New York Times? Did you watch any of his other?
No, I didn't see any of the other ones yet.
Oh, okay.
But watching him chub out over a fried chicken, I couldn't believe how excited he was that he's going to have all this fried chicken to be eating all this week. And it was like, okay. And then you told me you searched back into his Instagram, and he was a chubby teenager.
He's a fat girl just waiting to reappear. He is a chef for, I don't know if you call him a chef or a cook, but he writes for New York Times Cooking. He's been around since about the pandemic. He started doing things in his own kitchen for the magazine. And he is a big old girl, but very handsome. And he would very much fall into that kind of wolf bear category. He's got plenty of chest hair. He's got a full beard. But he always wears his pants like a woman. He like hikes them up too high, and he tucks his shirt in way too tight. It's very unattractive. One, and I can't remember what he was making, but it was the pants were elastic waisted.
Well, yeah.
Just like that is fucking hideous. Go ahead.
I've been watching this show on Hulu called Scraps, and it's the chef from Sur La Table.
Sur La Table.
Whatever it's called. Yeah, that dumb store with too expensive cookware. And the whole point is he's going around and picking up scraps and making good meals out of them. Like he went and got broccoli, but then took the florets, left them with whoever was there, and then he took the stock and made coleslaw out of it.
Oh, sure.
And I've always used, lately you can't, it's hard to get the stocks unless you buy it at the store, because I usually get it at Costco. So it's just the florets. But my mom always would take those and cut them really thin and then cook them with the regular broccoli. So I've always been using it, but it was interesting seeing what scraps he was using. The problem I have with the show is he's going to places and going, well, I'll take the scraps instead of what I want him to do is go to a restaurant and say, okay, whatever scraps you have, put in this dish pan, and then I'll come in later and take those scraps and convert it into another meal. I think that would be more interesting.
It'd be nothing but peels and cores of shit. It wouldn't be anything useful.
Well, you don't know that. Are they throwing the carcass of the chicken away? What are they doing with the bones? Show us how to melt down beef fat to tar. So we have some tallow. Tallow, yeah. I mean, things that's what I would find much more interesting than here I'm gonna cut off the good part and just use the bad part. Like he did go to a farmer's market and he said, pick up whatever gross strawberries you have that nobody wants to buy that haven't turned. And he took those and then he made the strawberry jam out of them. So, that was good. But I mean, I think for the most part, a lot of people, well, at least we'll start looking at what they're doing with their scraps differently. I mean, I'm about ready to get a Ziploc bag and put all certain scraps, like produce scraps, into it, and freeze it so I could just dump that into my stock when I'm making stock. Because, you know, I'm throwing away the ends of the onions. I'm throwing it away. Sure. And all this gets, and all of it gets strained anyway. So,
right.
But, you know, all that stuff, you know, Sean doesn't like the green part of the green onions. What? He just likes the white part of the green onions. I know. I always get it. And he doesn't like the green parts of the lettuce, you know, the tops of the lettuces.
Those like can Romaine be a bitter sometimes.
So I always get those, but I use that. And he always takes the other part. But when you cut off that thing at the bottom, you know, the root thing,
sure,
that could go into a stock and sure, it would be, you know, just I found it educational, even though I didn't get the show I was hoping for.
I could see how, I mean, just to make it make to guarantee that he's getting something he can use, it sounds like it would have to be fairly staged.
Yeah, basically that's it. I mean, yeah, he even was making he went to a place that does a brewery kind of place and was taking all their old, you know, all the stuff that comes out at the bottom of the beer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he made he dried it and made a flour out of it. And flour as in cooking baking. Flour.
Yeah.
Baking flour. And that sounded interesting. So
I would think that wouldn't taste like much because it's already all in the beer.
I know.
I mean, I guess to augment the flour that you have to stretch it as far as economy goes, but I don't think
regular flour doesn't have that much flavor in it.
Oh, either, that's true. So. You're tasting the yeast or the sourdough, yeah, whatever you're putting
right
into the bread.
So, yeah. Hmm. So,
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I know. I like cooking shows that make me think.
Sure.
You know? Yeah.
Sure.
So. Sure. So how are we doing on time?
We've got 3 minutes. So we've gone from Von Vreeland's Hideous Pants to Kitchen Scraps. I think we can go ahead and sign off now.
Okay. Well, that's it for us this week. We'll talk to you next time.